Welcome back. It's 11:04. I'm Lauren Savon in for Peter Tilden on this Friday. At any moment now, we are awaiting a White House press briefing on Sean Spicer's resignation. He is now the former press secretary of President Trump. He has decided to resign, although apparently he's going to hang out throughout August to help the transition. That won't be awkward. Joining us to talk about it and all things Trumpland is Jessica Levinson. She's a professor at Loyola Law School. She's also president of the Los Angeles Ethics Commission. You can tweet her at Levinson Jessica. Jessica, there's so much news coming out of this White House today. We might have to interrupt to take this live press conference. But before we do, can you give us your take on the spices out? Jessica?
Well, it's interesting that this is the straw that broke the camel's back.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, there were so many moments where a lot of people thought, if my boss did that to me, if my boss asked me to go out in front of an audience and say X, Y, or Z, I would be out the door. But as it turned out, it was hiring a communications director who he apparently doesn't want to work with and thinks it's a big mistake, a Wall Street financier. And so, I mean, to me, that's the story, which is he said, well, you know, you didn't follow my advice on hiring. And he, of course, was serving as both the press secretary and the communications director for a while. And maybe he felt like it was a demotion. Maybe he felt like he was being disrespected. But again, it's fascinating considering the absolute, you know, I mean, he basically had to turn himself into a pretzel for 6 months. And this is the thing that ushers him out the door.
Yeah, not to mention he didn't get to meet the Pope.
Well, that's true, too. So I would think that he would feel, sort of, let's say, disappointed for a number of reasons throughout the last 6 months. But I guess everybody has their breaking point.
Jessica, when you look at the way the president treats people in his own cabinet, you have him, you know, outwardly criticizing Attorney General Jeff Sessions. He gave Spicer a tough time. I mean, he basically thought he was weak, that he thought reporters, you know, ran roughshod over him. He wasn't his biggest supporter. When you work for a president like that, that doesn't sound like the president has a lot of faith in you. How does this guy hire people? I mean, who wants these jobs?
Well, I guess I would say a couple things. One is, I think it's just important for listeners to remember, this is not normal. It is not normal for a president to publicly rebuke members of his administration and members of his cabinet who he has hired. And so he's undermined not just Robert Mueller, let's say, who's investigating him and who we understand why he would want to undermine, but he's undermining the people who work for him, who are trying to help him craft his message. And so, you know, in terms of how does he hire someone, I mean, I assume, having never received that call, that it is still an enormous honor to hear the president of the United States would like you to serve.
Sure.
And so it's difficult, I think, to turn it down. And I think it would be difficult to just kind of, you know, out of, I assume that a lot of people would think about it and consider it and maybe want to work in the administration, but I don't think that it engenders a lot of loyalty, certainly, to be treating basically members of your staff this way.
And Jessica, it's got to be the toughest job in the country, being President Trump's press secretary. This is a guy who does not really have a clear message on many things, or, you know, has conflicting messages on many things. And to be able to be his mouthpiece and kind of generate a narrative for this White House is got to be a tough job, got to be a stressful job. And then to get it from both sides, the press corps as well as the president, that can't be good for stress levels.
No, right. I mean, his poor adrenal glands are just shot.
They're shot.
I would also say that I think being President Trump's lawyer, it would be incredibly difficult too. I mean, he's someone who just either can't or won't stay on message, and who oftentimes I think undercuts his best arguments by tweeting out something, and we've seen.
Right.
For instance, his son do the same thing.
Exactly.
And, you know, I mean, Donald Trump Jr.'s lawyer, when he saw the tweets, regarding his meeting with Russian officials. I mean, you know, how many times can you bang your head against a wall before you're ready to talk to your client again?
And yet, that's what most Americans love about this president. They love that he's accessible on Twitter, that he's giving them the message that he wants out there on Twitter. I mean, that's one of the biggest reasons they voted for him. However, I will say they also voted for him because he promised to do something about immigration and cut taxes, and he's not doing that. Instead, he's embroiled in these a scandal a minute, it feels like, between the Russia investigation. Now there's talk of, you know, the president potentially pardoning himself. I mean, as well as family and aides that might be caught up in this investigation. I guess he can. I don't even know legally what he can. He even be charged? I don't know how it works.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry about the background noise. Let me try and get somewhere quieter for a second. The first thing I would say is I don't think that we're sure that a majority of Americans like his accessibility. You know, just as a caveat, I mean, his approval ratings are historically low. So there's 36% of Americans who approve of him. I don't know what percentage really enjoy his tweeting. You know, in terms of the legal question that I think you wanted to get to more than that, it is an open question as to whether or not a president can pardon himself. I mean, why? Because unlike so many other constitutional issues, nobody has ever asked the courts to decide this. And that's for good reason. It's good that we have existed for more than 200 years and no president has decided to try and pardon himself.
Oh, I mean, yeah. We've had so many legal firsts in the 6 months of this administration.
Yeah, so I'm hugely proud of our country, actually, that we don't have case precedent on this. Now, it's an open question. What's my best guess? My best guess is that the president cannot do this. Now, of course, the Supreme Court could say tomorrow that an emolument actually means sunglasses. And then from here on out, every time we see emolument in the Constitution, it means sunglasses. So the big caveat is, if the Supreme Court says it's okay, then it's okay. That's the law of the land, and Congress can't challenge that. But if you look at the language of the Constitution that gives the president these broad powers to pardon, and if you look at the founders' intent, and if you look at a couple other parts of the Constitution and how it's structured, I think it's very doubtful that at least the framers of the Constitution would envision the president pardoning himself.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think that was something that came up. And you're right. 200 years, this has never happened. We're talking to Jessica Levinson, professor at Loyola Law School, president of the Los Angeles Ethics Commission. You can tweet her at Levinson Jessica. Is there a countdown clock right now until Mueller is fired? That just seems like that's where this is going.
I'm actually not convinced that that's where this is going. So, one, how does Mueller get fired? Well, the president can't directly fire Mueller, so he would have to ask the acting attorney general, who right now is Rod Rosenstein, to fire Mueller. If Rod Rosenstein refuses, then the president has to fire him and then just basically start going down the list of people in the Department of Justice who might be willing to fire Robert Mueller and, you know, basically keep firing people until he finds someone who's willing to execute his order.
Well, Nixon did it, right?
And that's exactly what I was going to say. It's a Saturday night massacre.
Yeah.
Now, I think in this particular administration, President Trump would have to probably go through at least two or three people, because the next person is Rachel Brand, and I think she's unlikely to want to carry out that order. But, you know, in terms of President Trump talking about potentially firing Robert Mueller or that he has conflicts of interest, I actually think that this is not about the law. It's about what we've seen the president do when he was candidate Trump, which is to try and discredit people and to try and say, I mean, he even said, oh, there's real conflicts of interest here. And, you know, I'll tell you about it soon. We heard him say that a lot on the campaign trail. There's something terrible here and I'll tell you about it soon. And right. Even if that soon never comes, he's basically sowing seeds of distrust. And I think that what this is about is just trying to undermine the legitimacy of a very legitimate special counsel.
I mean, this guy has a reputation that is solid gold from everything I've read. It doesn't sound like this guy is going to be intimidated by anything.
I mean, he is straight out of central casting in terms of who would you pick to start investigating the firing of the now former FBI director. The previous
FBI director who really does have a sterling reputation. You know, look, he's a human being. I'm sure this bothers him, but I don't think that he's likely to say, oh, the president is saying nasty things about me in the media. I think I'm going to throttle back my investigation.
Right.
But I don't think Robert Mueller is President Trump's audience. I think that it's I think it's Congress, and I think it's the American voters.
Now, we also, the news came out this morning, but it seems like decades ago, President Trump has shuffled his legal team as well. Mark Kasowitz, who's been his lawyer forever, he's no longer leading the president's group of private lawyers. Kasowitz is still working for him. I guess he just has a different role, but what would that signify?
Well, so I would say, I think that with respect to the Trump administration, there's a lot of things that are, you know, indicate that something nefarious could be going on, or that it's kind of circumstantial evidence that something is, something problematic is happening. This to me is not one of those things. People do shuffle around legal teams all the time. And I would say just because you decide to hire, let's say, someone who has an enormous experience with federal criminal prosecutions, doesn't mean that you're guilty. It means actually that you're kind of coming to your senses and you realize that you want some expertise on your team. And so unless I'm kind of missing the broader story on this, I think the legal shuffle is potentially just something that someone else would have done a long time ago, which is just to make sure that you have as much expertise as you can on your side.
So not to make too much hay of this.
Yeah, I mean,
There's
so
plenty of other stuff to make hay about, by the way.
You know, people, I mean, bigger issues in terms of legal team, I think there were a number of stories that a lot of lawyers actually turned down President Trump when he asked them to represent him in various capacities. You know, other issues that I think are real with respect to Donald Trump's legal representation, he actually paid the Trump Corporation, the campaign did, a lot of legal fees. That's kind of interesting. What the Trump campaign decided to pay for in terms of legal fees, consulting fees, and that so much of it went to the Trump Corporation, I think that's problematic. But this particular shuffle, I'm not seeing it yet.
We're talking to Jessica Levinson, professor at Loyola Law School and president of the Los Angeles Ethics Commission. We're also awaiting a White House press briefing after Sean Spicer's resignation this morning. Sean Spicer telling CNN this morning he wanted to give the president a clean slate. Jessica, he is going to hang around, though, while this transition happens. And apparently he resigned out of, we were talking earlier, he resigned because he doesn't love the guy that the president just hired onto his communications team, Anthony Scaramucci, known as the Mooch. Which delights me as a reporter, because it just sounds like these press briefings are going to get a heck of a lot more entertaining. But what, I mean, hiring a financier as your communications director, a lot of people within his administration seem to have a problem with that.
Well, I mean, hiring the former CEO of Exxon as their Secretary of State is also interesting. I mean, so President Trump has shown, I think, a pattern of hiring people that he likes, but who don't necessarily have the resume or background, which may be why, in fact, we were talking about the shuffle with his legal team, is that may be the one area where we don't see him do that, where we do see him looking for more expertise. But I think we've seen a number of people who he's kind of promoted to high positions of power, his son-in-law, his daughter,
yep.
Who... If your last name wasn't Trump or Kushner and you submitted your resume for a position as senior counsel to the president, I think people would laugh you off the street and say that there's just no world. So the fact that I think this is actually incredibly consistent with his hiring practices, which is the president hires people who I think he feels like he wants to be surrounded by them, or he thinks they're good people, or he thinks that he owes them, or, you know, I don't know, any number of things. But it clearly doesn't seem to be based on, because they've done this so often in the past, and therefore they have a level of expertise that other people don't have.
No, I mean, that would also fit into his drain the swamp, idea that he didn't want people that have been in government all their lives. He wanted his own people. But I think trust is one of his huge issues, considering all the infighting going on within that White House, that he must just be stockpiling people that he feels are on his side. And Scaramucci has been on cable news touting Trump for, you know, the last 6 months.
And I think the drain the swamp is interesting. I mean, you said kind of people who haven't been in government. And I think it was a lot. Obviously, President Trump's victory had a lot to do with this anti-establishment sentiment that we always talk about but never actually comes to fruition because people keep reelecting incumbents. But I think what's interesting is that, one, President Trump hasn't drained the swamp, but that narrative kind of morphed into, I don't really like people who are lobbyists, or I don't like people who are big investment bankers. And then that, as it turns out, is exactly who he hiring. So drain the swamp. I actually really want to talk to people who believe that he is draining the swamp, because this to me is, I would never write a TV show where someone says, I'm going to drain the swamp, and then does something so diametrically opposed to that message.
No, a lot of people would believe that the people he's hiring is the swamp itself. But my question is, you know, when you have a White House that has very few people that have worked in government for a long time, I mean, is that the reason for a lot of infighting, or perhaps the fact that he's hiring all his kids in the White House? I mean, I know nepotism isn't necessarily illegal, but gosh, it doesn't look good, especially when his kids are now getting him in a heap of trouble.
Well, I mean, I think that there, I guess I couldn't isolate one reason why there's so much infighting and there's so much kind of issues of loyalty and lack of trust. I mean, I think it's everything we talked about. I think it's the fact that there are very few people in the room who have any real government experience. And again, I would offer to your listeners that merely working in government does not mean that you're an evil person. So having some level of expertise in order to do your job, I don't think we should see as disqualifying, but apparently now we do. I also think, you know, it's a lot of people who are just trying to find their footing and who haven't done this before. It's a lot of people who, frankly, have no particular training, no particular background for this, for their particular task. So that's going to cause problems. It's unclear a lot of times kind of who's in charge of a message. I mean, and you have a president who frequently, I mean, to put it euphemistically, contradicts himself. So even if you as a White House staff are working like a well-oiled machine and you have a great message and you're getting it out there, if your boss is going to talk to the New York Times and is both internally inconsistent and is contradicting things he said, you know, a few days before,
yeah,
that also makes your job very difficult.
Oh, yeah. It's a tough job, for sure. Whoever has it, I mean, God bless them. We're talking to Jessica Levinson. She's a professor at Loyola Law School, president of the Los Angeles Ethics Commission. You can tweet her at Levinson Jessica. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, the White House press conference. Oh, the White House press conference. It's just about to happen right now. They're entering the White House briefing room. We see Sarah Huckabee Sanders coming to the podium, and let's listen in.
Quiet crowd. Good afternoon. Mark the last day of Made in America Week this afternoon. The president will welcome several living survivors of the attack on the USS Arizona at Pearl Harbor and their families. Other events this week have focused mainly on the products and goods bearing that highly esteemed Made in America label. But truly the most prized thing to have come out of our country have been the brave men and women who have risked their lives protecting the freedom of Americans and our allies around the globe. And just a few minutes ago at 2 o'clock, the president signed an executive order that will ensure the men and women of the greatest military in the world have the ships, aircraft, vehicles, and other supplies they will need to keep us safe in the years ahead. This order commissions the first ever whole government assessment of America's defense industrial base, marking the first time since President Eisenhower that an American president is investing personal attention into the health of the United States defense industrial base. President Trump is committed to maintaining the secure supply chains and robust workforce that will support our nation's heroes for decades to come. Next week, we'll be highlighting American heroes like the World War II veterans, the first responders who keep our communities safe every day, and the boys and girls who will grow up to be the next generation of American leaders. While I'm on the topic of the men and women who protect us, I also wanted to note that the president commended the House yesterday for voting to reauthorize the Department of Homeland Security for the first time. The Homeland Security Authorization Act also authorizes U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement for the first time. Secretary Kelly has already made tremendous progress in fulfilling the president's promise to end illegal immigration and fully enforce the laws of the United States. And this bill reflects the president's strong commitment to ensuring that progress continues. Also on the Hill, of course, Senate Republicans this week continued to work toward our shared goal of saving the American people from the disaster of Obamacare. Earlier this afternoon, Vice President Pence and Secretary of Health and Human Services, Dr. Tom Price, hosted representatives from several grassroots organizations calling on the Senate to take action on health care legislation. As the president has said, inaction is simply not an option. These groups want lawmakers to know that their members want them to follow through on their promise to the American people. Finally, I'd like to read a statement from the president on the resignation of Press Secretary Sean Spicer. I am grateful for Sean's work on behalf of my administration and the American people. I wish him continued success as he moves on to pursue new opportunities. Just look at his great television ratings. Sean will continue to serve the administration through August. And the president has also appointed Anthony Scaramucci as communications director. And I have a statement on Anthony's appointment as well. Anthony is a person I have great respect for, and he will be an important addition to this administration. He's been a great supporter and will now help implement key aspects of our agenda while leading the communications team. We have accomplished so much, and we are being given credit for so little. The good news is the people get it, even if the media doesn't. And I'd like to bring Anthony up to say a few words and take a few questions. As always, I'll be back after that to answer any follow-up questions.
Thank you very much.
So I'm going to be very brief. I'm going to make my remarks informal, and then I'll take questions from everybody. First off, I'd like to announce formally that Sarah Huckabee Sanders is going to be the president. Oh, you can't hear me? I'm sorry. Better? Sarah Huckabee Sanders is going to be the press secretary. And so you can congratulate her after the session. You still can't hear me? No sound? Okay. Better? Better now? Better now? I'm going to start over. You guys heard me in the front, though, right? What did I say, John? Sarah's going to be the press secretary, right? Okay, so congratulations to you, sir. And so I want to make a couple of statements. The first thing I want to say is I want to thank personally Sean Spicer, not only on behalf of myself, the president, the administration, but Sean is a true American patriot. He's a military serviceman. He's got a great family. And he's done an amazing job. This is obviously a difficult situation to be in. And I applaud his efforts here. And I love the guy. And I wish him well. And I hope he goes on to make a tremendous amount of money. As it relates to me in this position, I'm going to spend a couple of weeks getting to know the people here. And I'm going to be as coordinated as I can with the people inside the West Wing. There's been some speculation in the press about me and Reince, so I just want to talk about that very quickly. Reince and I have been personal friends for 6 years. We are a little bit like brothers, where we rough each other up once in a while, which is totally normal for brothers. There's a lot of people in here that have brothers, and so you get that. But he's a dear friend. He brought me into the political system. He brought me into the Republican National Committee network. He introduced me to Governor Walker. We've spent many times together socially. A lot of people are not aware about this, but after the Romney campaign, I invited Reince into Skybridge. I think it reflects poorly on Reince that he didn't take my offer to come in and be our chief operating officer. But I say that in jest, obviously. What I want you guys to know is that it was my first call this morning. I met with him before we sat in the Oval Office. And we are committed as true professionals to the team and the process of getting the administration's message out. I think that's going to be one of the big goals for us. I said during the transition, and I'll say it up here, I think there's been at times a disconnect between the way we see the president and how much we love the president and the way some of you perhaps see the president. And I certainly see the American people probably see the president the way I do. But we want to get that message out there. To use a Wall Street expression, there might be an arbitrage spread between how well we are doing and how well some of you guys think we're doing. And we're going to work hard to close that spread. And so I'm done.
Andrew,
I'll take the question.
Yeah.
No, I'm going to get to as many people as I can until she goes to me. Okay.
Two questions.
So go ahead.
Number one, what we have seen from his administration so far is the president being his own messenger very frequently. And that has caused, you know, some struggles for the communication staff. How do you expect to get this White House back on track?
Well, I'm going to take a slight issue with the question because I actually think the White House is on track and we're actually, I think, doing a really good job. Well, I actually do think from a messaging perspective because we have a whole list of things. And I didn't want to come out here with our list of accomplishments and start a whole advertisement infomercial right now. I really just wanted to talk about personnel movement and how we're thinking about things. But I think we're doing an amazing job. The president himself is always going to be the president. I was in the Oval Office with him earlier today, and we were talking about letting him be himself, letting him express his full identity. I think he's got some of the best political instincts in the world, and perhaps in history. If you think about it, he started his political ascent two years and two months ago, and he's done a phenomenal job for the American people. And the people I grew up with, they so identify with the president, and they love him. And so we're going to get that message out. So
my second question for you.
I'm going to get to everybody. Don't worry.
You can speak a little bit about how you plan to, obviously you're a business guy, you're a Wall Street guy, how you plan to handle any potential conflicts of interest, and walk us through how this offer was made to you, mm-hmm. what the president said when you were here, what the conversations were like.
Well, I don't think it's fair to the president for me to go into the exact conversation because I want to keep those conversations between me and him private. But we talked a little bit about the White House. We talked a little bit about our personal relationship. And then when he extended the offer to me, I said I would do it because I want to serve the president. You know, one of the things, I have a lot of family members that serve in the American military. Unfortunately, my generation, I'm born in 1964, I did not serve. I filled out the selective service. It's one of the regrets for my life. So this is an opportunity for me to serve the country. I love the president. I obviously love the country. Look at my life experience here in the country. And so it's an honor to be here. It's an honor to stand here, actually. In terms of my personal business conflicts?
Yeah,
so I have worked with the Office of Governmental Ethics to take care of all of my business conflicts. My start date is going to be in a couple of weeks so that it's a 100% totally cleansed and clean. And I don't see an issue with it. The Office of Governmental Ethics doesn't see an issue with it, nor does the White House Counsel. So. But you know, here's one thing I want to say about this, though. When you're bringing American business people into the administration and they've had some level of success in the society, they have to unencumber themselves. You know, it's just a very interesting thing, and it's somewhat ironic. You want to go serve the country, and so the first thing you have to do is take on this mega opportunity cost by getting rid of all of your assets. And so, but I'm willing to do that because I love the country. John, make it to everybody.
Anthony, you've been watching this White House from somewhat outside, and I'm sure you have your own perspective on what you've seen.
Not quite as tan as you, though. Not that outside.
What is the first thing you're going to change to try to right this ship and put it on a course?
Again, I take issue with that. I think the ship is going in the right direction. I think we've got to just radio signal the direction very, very clearly. I like the team. Let me rephrase that. I love the team. And so I'm an incrementalist. Most entrepreneurs you will find are incrementalists. To say something overly bold or overly dramatic is unfair. What good entrepreneurs do is they start the day and they go through the process. The Navy SEALs would tell you that if you want to eat an elephant, you got to eat it one bite at a time. And Sarah and I are going to do that together. We'll get to everybody. Gareth, go ahead.
Anthony, did you have any hesitation taking this job, knowing it might cause some friction and that it might lead to Sean leaving, which is what's going to happen? And the two are at least somewhat coincidental. And did you have any hesitation about how you would relate to the rest of the White House staff if you came in under those circumstances?
Okay, well, listen, you know, I'm a business person, and so what happens in business a lot of the times is you have some rotation in personnel as you're making changes, and you have lifestyle choices that people are also making. I would love to have Sean here. Sean decided that he thought it would be better to go, and for me, as it relates to Sean, it speaks volumes to who he is as a human being, who he is as a team player. Okay, so his attitude is, if Anthony's coming in, let me clear the slate for Anthony, and I do appreciate that about Sean, and I love him for it. But I don't have any friction with Sean. I don't have any friction with Reince. This is the White House, the United States of America. We're serving the president. And I want to make sure that our cultural template is that we put the president's agenda first, which is perfect for the American people, and we serve his interests. And so if we have a little bit of friction inside the White House as a result of that, it's okay. We can all live with that. I'm a business person. I'm used to dealing with friction.
You were a significant player during the transition. Was it disappointing that you did not land a post here from the get-go?
Again, I would say as an entrepreneur, you have to be accustomed to setbacks. I've had a series of setbacks in my life, which I've written about. I wrote a best-selling book, and if you don't believe me, you can come into my basement. I'll show you every copy in order to get it to be a best-selling book. And so I'm very honest about mistakes that I've made and setbacks that I've had. And so was I disappointed? Yes, I said that candidly, that I was disappointed. But I love the president, and I'm very, very loyal to the president. And I love the mission that the president has. Okay, since the early days of the campaign, when I went to these rallies and I saw the love that the people had for the president, and I grew up in the middle class, and so there's a struggle out there. The president saw that before I did. I wish I could tell you I saw it before him, but he taught it to me. And I feel that struggle, and I have empathy for that struggle, and I want to be here to help make things better for the American people. So I'll get to this. Yes, I'm going to try to get to everybody, I promise you. I'll try to get to everybody.
Sean told the AP and others that the president needed a clean slate. How does that comport with a White House that's headed in the right direction? And secondly, how badly does the president need a win on health care in order to make progress?
Okay, so here's the one problem with the way our society is working right now. We are micromanaging the seconds of the news cycle. I predicted the president will get a win in health care. That's my honest prediction, just because I've seen him in operation over the last 20 plus years. The president has really good karma, okay? And the world turns back to him. He's genuinely a wonderful human being. And I think as the members of Congress get to know him better and get comfortable with him, they're going to let him lead them to the right things for the American people. So I think we're going to get the health care done. I also think we're going to get tax reform done. And whatever else is on the president's agenda, we're going to work very, very hard, very studiously here to make it happen.
So John, the cameras are back. Will you commit now to holding regular on-camera briefings?
If she supplies hair and makeup, I will consider it. Okay, but I need a lot of hair and makeup, John. Okay, but I don't know. Maybe. Not at all. This is the press secretary. I'm up here today only because I think it was the first day we made a mutual decision that would make sense for me to come up here and try to answer as many questions as possible. But the answer is we may. I have to talk to the president about it. I like consulting with the president before I make decisions like that. Go ahead, John.
I know you've been one of the president's strongest supporters for a while now, but does he know what you said about him back in 2015 when you said he was a hack mom?
You're listening to the press house briefing here live on 790 KABC. We're listening to Anthony Scaramucci, who has just been hired into the president's communications department, speaking to the press corps about his new role, about the president, and you can hear just what a fan he is of President Trump as we listen in.
And you've never forgotten it. But, you know, I hope that someday, Mr. President, you'll forget it. Okay, let's go to the next question.
Can I ask you one more?
Go ahead, John.
There's been a question about credibility, some things that have been said in this room. Let me ask you a variation of what I asked Sean Spicer on his first day. Is it your commitment to the best of your ability, give accurate information, the truth from that podium?
I sort of feel like I don't even have to answer that question. I hope you can feel that from me, just from my body language. That's the kind of person I am. I'm going to do the best I can. I'm going to get to everybody. Go ahead.
Hey, Anthony, you mentioned your relationship with Bryant. Was he involved in offering you this position? Was he consulted by the president ahead of time?
Yes, he was consulted. He was involved in the thing. There's a lot of speculation in the press about the timing and so on and so forth. And so what I'm here to tell you is that we're a team. Now, if you
walk us through how the job was offered.
Like I said, I think some of this stuff, it's unnecessary to go into that granular detail because then, you know, it's almost like the book The Circle where you're wearing like a police camera on you when you're having conversations. I don't think that's fair to the president. But here's what I would tell you, okay? I'm a team player. I've, played team sports my whole life, at least as a kid. And I believe that you have to subordinate yourself to the greater good of the team. And if teammates don't have disagreements about certain things, then they're not going to get to the championship. You've got to get together and, you know, mix it up a little bit from time to time. I have no problem mixing up with these guys. I love these guys. I respect these guys. Is it perfect every single day? Tell me whose life is perfect every single day. But here's the commitment that I'm making to you and to the American people and to the president, that I'm here to serve him and I'm here to serve the people inside the West Wing.
Just to follow up on John's question, are you committed then to regular televised briefings and having a transparent relationship with the press?
And again, I obviously am committed to being transparent because I'm standing here, but I'd like to talk that over with the president, and we have a new press secretary. I'd like to talk it over with her, and then we'll get back to you on that. But I, you know, listen, you know, I'm standing right here. I'm going to try to answer every question. Sarah, go ahead.
So, two quick questions. The first one, obviously, you know, the president has been feeling under siege with the Russia investigation, both at the Department of Justice, but also on the Hill. Do you feel like he was feeling exposed? He didn't have people adequately coming to his defense? Is that part of the reason that we have you here today?
I don't think so. So one of the things that I'm doing today is I sort of didn't have my White House counsel briefing before I'm having the press briefing. So I want to limit my remarks related to the Russia situation and things like that. But here's what I tell you about the president. He's the most competitive person I've ever met. Okay, I've seen this guy throw a dead spiral through a tire. I've seen him at Madison Square Garden with a top coat on. He's standing in the key and he's hitting foul shots and swishing them. Okay, he sinks 3-foot punts. I don't see this guy as a guy that's ever under siege. This is a very, very competitive person. Obviously, there's a lot of incoming that comes into the White House, but the president's a winner. Okay, and what we're going to do is we're going to do a lot of winning.
Just one other question. Just in terms of the relationship that this press operation has had with you, that left, I mean, they've made a habit of calling news outlets they don't like fake news, calling stories they don't like fake news, calling errors that were then corrected, using that as an example to call entire news outlets fake news. Is that the kind of relationship you want with media outlets? What kind?
So,
how do you envision that relationship?
Again, I want to speak for myself right now because I don't. It's my first day on the job. I got to get familiar with everybody, get direction from the president. But I had a personal incident with your news organization, and I thought I handled it well. You guys said something about me that was totally unfair and untrue. You retracted it and issued me an apology, and I accepted the apology immediately. And so for me, I've never been a journalist, but I have played a journalist on television. You know, I used to host Wall Street Week for Fox Business. And so I have empathy for journalists in terms of sometimes they're going to get stories wrong. But I sort of don't like the fake news. And if you said to me that there's some media bias out there, if you want me to be as candid as I would like to be with you guys, there feels like there's a little bit of media bias. And so what we hope we can do is de-escalate that and turn that around. And let's let the message from the president get out there to the American people. Yes. Really going to try to get there. How are you doing, Maggie?
The president is known to see himself as his own best spokesperson, his own best messenger. That was clearly a challenge that Sean had at his podium. How do you plan on navigating that differently than him or Mike Dunphy or anybody else?
Here's what I would say. Okay, again, I thought Sean did a very, very good job. He's a very articulate person. He's had 30 years in communications. I would imagine that there are people here that are going to be super excited when he lands in a job that he really likes. He'll be a very effective communicator for wherever he goes. As it relates to standing at the podium, I think everybody has their own individual personality. I do believe that the best messenger, the best media person, the most savvy person in the White House is the President of the United States, and I'm frankly hoping to learn from him as well as learn from Sarah and other people here.
How would you characterize your relationship with the President? How long has it lasted? A couple hours ago?
He's probably not going to remember this, but the first time I met the president, and again, he was a name brand even back in the day. I was 31. Michael Fascitelli was a close personal friend of mine. We were at Goldman Sachs together. He introduced me to the president. I had met him a few more times from that. Randy Levine, the president of the Yankees, introduced me to him a few times. And then I would say that we got closer during the Romney campaign, where we did a couple of fundraisers in his magnificent apartment. And so I think I don't think I'd be standing here if I didn't have a good relationship with the president. I love the president. And I think a lot of you guys know in the media I've been very, very loyal to him. And I'm going to do the best I can with my heart and soul on this job and try to serve him the best way that I can.
One last question. Do you plan on changes in the contract beyond this? Or is there going to be other changes?
Yeah, I mean, there was some speculation. The things I can talk about specifically is Dan Scavino and Hope Hicks are staying. So I know there was some speculation about that. I just spoke to both of them. I love the two of them. I go back a long ways with them. I think they're two phenomenal people. As it relates to the other people in the comp shop, I've got to get to know them. Sean was incredibly gracious a few hours ago where we sat in his office and he spoke to them on my behalf. Rice was incredibly gracious. I spoke to them as well. I got to get to know the people. They got to get to know me. Hopefully, they'll like me and they'll want to stay. And we'll see what happens. But we're gonna make it a very fun place to work.
I'm trying to get to everybody. Thank you very much. Are you going to more discussing about the national security issues at this podium?
Yeah. Okay, that's a really good question, but I think it's inappropriate for me to answer that question right now. And so I have to get back to you on that because I got to get some direction from General McMaster and the President. I'm going to go this way. Blake, I'm going to get to you. I promise. I'm going to do everything I can to get to every person in this room. Yes.
Do you encourage President Trump to have a press conference with us in the near future?
I'll talk to him. Absolutely. I mean, you know, listen, I mean, the president's phenomenal with the press, okay? And he's a great communicator. He won this election. I used to know the math a lot better when I was in the campaign and during the transition, but I think we spent, like, I don't know, 60% of the money, and we had one-third the personnel. We won the presidency because of Donald J. Trump. He is an unbelievable politician. And so, he's going to, at some point, we'll make sure that happens. I don't know what point that's going to be because I have to talk to him.
Anthony.
Blake, I'm going to do my very best to get to everybody. Let me just go in a way that's some order. I'm going to go here first.
Anthony, you seem like you're a very savvy person, and you said that the White House is a difficult place. How are you going to handle a couple of things?
When did I say that? I mean, I probably said it. Let me explain that. Okay, let me be specific. It's a difficult place because here's what happens, okay? It's a little cramped in there. You've got a lot of reporters from international news agencies, and it's a difficult place because you're trying to get a job done, but you're sitting inside of a fishbowl. And so that's what I mean by it's a difficult place. I don't mean it's a difficult place to work in terms of the people. I think what you'd find is that there's a lot less palace intrigue than it's getting reported about. And so, but that does create some tension and anxiety, and I'm going to work alongside of my peers here to reduce that tension and anxiety because we all genuinely like each other.
But how are you going to handle? How are you going to handle the question? How are you going to handle when a crisis or a big thing comes up, mm-hmm. and you put a very sophisticated message out at night, and the president in the morning tweets something very different?
Okay.
And are you willing to say you've made a mistake? Okay. So two questions are there.
Oh, well, listen, I took trial advocacy at Harvard Law School. A little name dropping there, if you don't mind. Okay? And so I'm not going to answer that because that's a hypothetical, and the first thing they teach in trial advocacy is not to answer a hypothetical. But here's what I will tell you, okay? I love the president, and the president is a very, very effective communicator, and he'll use social media. I think he's got if I get this wrong, I know I'm going to hear it from him, so I hope I don't get it wrong. He's got 113 million or 114 million. I know he's picking up about 300,000 followers a day, God bless him. And so to me, I think it's been very effective use of reaching the American public directly. And so, listen, I welcome him continuing to do that. I think it's very, very important for him to express his identity because what I have found when I travel around the country, people love him.
What do you say when his message is different than what you put out the night before?
Okay, so again, that's a hypothetical, so it's totally unfair of me to even answer that because how can I answer that? I don't know what the tweet is. I don't know what happened. It's just unfair. And so you learn that early in law school not to answer that question. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Has the president expressed any frustration to you at all that a lot of these briefings have been off camera? And since he wants to get his message out, wouldn't he believe put them on camera would be beneficial?
He hasn't expressed that to me, so I don't know his opinion on that, so I can't answer that question honestly.
How involved in the day-to-day operations of the press department will he be going forward?
As much or as little as he wants to be. I mean, he's the president of the United States. I'm here to serve him. I'm certainly going to do my very best to communicate to him what I think is the most effective strategy for him to get his message out to the American people and to the global community. But it'll be as much or as little as he wants to be. You know, he did, you know, give me the orders today that I'm in charge and I report directly to him, and I'm going to do my very best to serve him. So as much or as little as he wants.
Just to follow on that, your relationship with the chief of staff, mm-hmm. is he your boss or do you report directly to the president?
Okay, so I'm going to let Reince answer that. I have no problem working for Reince. I can only speak about my management style, okay? I have been on Wall Street for 29 years. Nobody has ever worked for me. People work with me. I believe in a lot of collaboration. I think if you do that, it's very, very empowering for people. I have no problem working for Rice. The president said I report to him directly. But listen, you guys are going to be very, very surprised about the relationship that I have with Rice and the closeness that we're going to have in terms of working to serve the president. And so he's the chief of staff. And so it would be foolish of me not to communicate with him, not to relay to him every single thing that I'm doing.
Do you stand by some of the factual claims that have been contested, that have been made by this administration, 3 million illegal votes cast for the president's opponent? Do you endorse all of those statements of fact that have been made?
Okay, so it's a little bit of an unfair question because I'm not up to speed on all of that. So I'm just candidly telling you that.
You said 3 million people voted illegally.
Okay, so...
Stand by that or not?
So if the president says it, okay, let me do more research on it. My guess is that there's probably some level of truth to that. I think what we have found sometimes, the president says stuff. Some of you guys in the media think it's not true or it isn't true. It turns out it's closer to the truth than people think. So let me do more homework on that, and I'll get back to you. I'm feeling the hook here. I can feel the hook here. So I want to answer. Is it okay to answer two more questions? Let me get to Blake first, and I'll go to the other people.
Thank you. Congrats on the new job. Question for you.
You really congratulate me on the job?
It's a new job. Congrats. You've gone through your past, law school, business, finance, but you've never held a communications-type role. What would you say to your critics who say he's never done anything like this and this is the White House? Secondly, if you can just lay out kind of why you wanted the job, and thirdly, before you go, why you chose immediately right off the bat Sarah to be the press secretary.
Well, I want to start with Sarah first, okay? So the president loves Sarah. He thinks she's doing a phenomenal job. I agree with him. I think Rice Priebus and other members of the staff agree. And I'm super proud to work with her. And I think she's going to be phenomenal as a press secretary. As it relates to me, I think that you will find in my background and my career, I have a lot of communications experience. And I spent a lot of time on television. I spent a lot of time shaping the message for my old firm, my predecessor firm. And so time will tell. But here's something I will tell you about myself. There's a lot of stuff that I don't know, and so I'm going to lean on people like Sarah and other people to help me be the best that I can possibly be. I'm going to take one last question. I'm going to take this question right here, right? I'm getting the hook, right?
Can I follow up on what Blake was asking you? Two questions. Because of your legal background and the fact that you mentioned the White House counsels, can you explain to us what role, as someone who's been trained in the law, you plan to play in communications, interacting with the president's legal team dealing with the Russia investigation?
Yeah.
And then secondly, can I add on, most analysts who have ever looked at White House communications have, in academia or historians, have said that when a president says that he has communications problems, what he has is usually policy and political problems. You're arguing that we're not understanding in the United States how much the president should be appreciated and how much you love him. But can you describe to us how much you think that it goes beyond that concept and that the president has political and policy problems?
Okay, so let's start with the first question. Just repeat, the first question was what again exactly?
So, legal, you're going to interact with the president's legal team.
Okay,
in what
way? That's a good question. And so I'm close personal friends with Jay Sekulow. I have a relationship with John Dowd, and I'm going to work with Don McGahn and other people to just make sure that we're on message and we're handling ourselves in the most appropriate way possible. That's the best I can say about that.
You've been listening to the White House press briefing. This is Anthony Scaramucci talking to the press corps about his new position as communications director in the White House. We're going to take a quick break here at KBC. Check your traffic. We'll be back right after this.
Baby, believe me.
Dr. Drew joins me now.
Lauren.
What a press conference.
I'll tell you what. I think if you and I were to eat elephants,
we would take it one bite at a time.
One bite at a time. So that's how I'm going to approach my life today. Just the show is going to be one bite at a time.
And one bite at a time.
We're going to get into the Spicer thing and the Scaramucci thing.
I'm going to listen.
Yeah.
Scaramucci is a man in love.
Well, I think you're a little bit in love with him, too. You're kind of... I'm smitten. You're smitten
a little bit.
Yeah.
He's from Long Island. Yeah. I'm from Long Island.
You may not like him, but you're smitten.
Oh, I'm smitten. I love him.
So we'll see. He's certainly, entertaining. And he's not going to talk about Russia because I've been briefed on that yet. So I guess we'll have more on that later. Also, I'm going to talk to Alexandra Katahakis. This is her weekly visit with me. We're going to address the dean of the SC Medical School on his behavior there. His sex addiction, which is very clear to me.
Oh,
I'm sure it will be to Alexandra as well.
Apparently.
Yeah, I'm a little furious, I would say, with the LA Times for putting it on the front page. Because, Lauren, we all spill ink and airtime about reducing stigma. People with mental illness and substance abuse do horrible things in their disease. Don't stigmatize them when they're in their disease. That's the time to reduce stigma right then.
Dr.
That's
Drew.
Why people don't get to treatment.
Yeah. Have you ever, like, the news business, that's what we do. We report on stigmas. I mean, come on. What do you want us to do?
Put it on the B section. Don't shame and humiliate
it's
a friend.
It's an incredible sex scandal.
But
it's
don't
going
put
on
it in the front
page.
Look, to me, then stop talking about stigma then. Stop it. Be honest.
I never talk about stigma.
I know you know. You like stigma. You're into stigmatizing.
Keeps me in
All right, we got a lot to talk about. Mike's coming in. You know, here we go. It's Midday Live. Take it over.